The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Thursday edition of The Drive. Hey, it started off, you know, a little off and on rain and a little breezy and cloud cover while we had the chance to watch a little bit of football practice. Yeah, that's long gone. It is another hot, miserable day outside. If you're out this afternoon, I'm sorry. Get out of it as quickly as you can. Welcome in and get in, you know, get somewhere and kick back and check out The Drive. We're just getting underway here on this Thursday. It's Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Ferg, how you doing, man?
I'm doing all right.
And we said congratulations to you the other day on the air. And
yeah, I appreciate that.
That is big news.
Big news. I appreciate everybody. I mean, I didn't expect this much. This many.
It's
people
a big deal. But yeah, you know, it's a big deal.
And so it's really cool. I didn't think I had that many friends on and off the air. So I appreciate that. A lot of
them will be disappointed when they're not invited to the wedding. But I mean, you know,
you could be like Stoltz and invite himself to the wedding. That happened.
You know,
this week.
The thing is, let them know they're welcome as long as they bring a gift.
that's fine. That's the thing. Yeah, it's like, well, maybe you can know where we're registered. How about that? Yeah. But no, I appreciate that. It's been a fun week and. You know, big weekend for me personally, and then we run right into work this week. And man, I've learned a ton this week from fall camp, and getting an opportunity to talk to, you know, pretty much every. We just have offensive assistants left.
And those are coming up Tuesday.
Yeah, and it was a big day today, talking and watching practice, and really good group of players that they're lining up for us tomorrow as well. So. Learned a lot. Scrimmage this Saturday, so I mean, there's a ton going on at the moment.
I'm looking forward to learning what you guys heard today. It's the last time through for me for setting things up for classes.
Your mentions of retirement.
That's at my day job.
Have some listeners nervous
at the university job. No. But I'm responsible for scheduling. Classes and then people to record classes, and this is not a good time for me to be able to get away. I was pleased that I was able to get away and watch a little of practice this morning. Was not able to be there. I've missed the last couple of midday things. I'm hoping I can work it Tuesday. We'll just have to wait and see. But anyway, yeah, big day.
Classes, as people may not know.
University classes start next Wednesday.
And
6 days counting.
When you're dealing with graduate school classes especially.
I'm dealing with over 100 classes that have the propensity for changing times and days and staffing them with students whose schedules are always in flux.
But the mm-hmm. but the finding
a finite number of rooms.
Yeah, that's I was going to say the delicate dance between having the classrooms available and not to mention that some of these classes can emerge out of nowhere very late in the game. And
I've got a call to make here in just a couple of minutes. Right.
You know, something can pop in on the schedule and say, hey, we need a classroom at a certain time. And that can cause a reshuffling.
Yours truly has to find a room.
Exactly. Yeah. And so there's this can be a busy time for Bill, but thankfully we're here too. It's a busy time for a lot of people on the beat too. I mean,
this is great.
Early morning practices and opportunities with players and coaches. Going to talk to 5 players tomorrow. Saturday,
strong 5.
A nice lineup of players tomorrow.
Yeah, three guys. It's 3 transfers, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, three or four,
and only one player who is a returning starter.
I think that's pretty cool.
It's
3 players, and you're right. A second year receiver, Camden Brown, on top of the 3 new players, Camden Brown and Jalen Simpson.
Right,
I believe are the 5. But we got the defensive assistants today. I thought there was some really interesting stuff from all 4 of the assistant coaches we got to talk to. Garrett, Aldridge, Etheridge, and Coach Crime, as Zach Etheridge calls him a couple times, Wesley McGriff, who was I thought all 4.
I don't think anybody ever calls him Coach McGriff. It's Crime for everybody everywhere.
Coach. I mean, I've heard him Crime Dog, and I have heard someone like in questions people will ask about Coach McGriff.
Yeah,
right. But it's like
it's always Crime.
Yeah, it's about It's Coach Crime more than anyone else. So it's it was great to talk to the four assistant coaches on defense today, and we might run some of that because I got to got a little bit of one on one time with Aldridge, and we had quite a bit of time with Zach Etheridge as well, and I thought they both had some really interesting things to say about the different players at their position and some observations about the team in general. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, what caught your, what piqued your interest of the stuff we heard from coaches today?
Yeah, not to ignore the secondary, but as somebody who wrote about the defensive backs earlier this week, I concentrated my time today on defensive line coach Jerry McGarrett and inside linebackers coach Josh Aldridge, and just trying to kind of hear what they think of their room right now and sorting some things out. Kind of, you know, you can piece together a decent little depth chart out of it, but talking about some guys that I think have been, you know, big breakout players so far in fall camp, some that we expected. Like, I think everybody saw that Keldrick Falk was probably going to be in line to play this year and play a big role, now playing defensive end under Jerry McGarrett. But to me, the story of camp, I think if you want to say on the offensive side of the ball, it's probably Jay Fair. Defensively, Eugene Asante. Eugene Asante, I'll say this, and for Auburn fans who might not know this yet, if Auburn had to start a game tomorrow, Eugene Asante would start at inside linebacker next to Austin Keys. And that's big because he was a guy that was, I think, largely forgotten about this offseason because he didn't play very much last year.
Yeah, I think Jay Fair is sort of in a similar situation where it was easy because there was so much turnover, it was easy to overlook, especially the holdovers from last year that didn't play very much and sort of write off those players as guys that weren't going to be able to contribute this year. And yet, here we are. And yeah, I think if Auburn had a game to play on Saturday, it seems like both Jay Fair and Eugene Asante would be in the starting lineups on their respective sides of the ball.
And Aldridge said this today, and it's important to note. You got to keep in mind, there was a lot that went on for Eugene Asante off the field last year. Going through, he had a death in his family. He had some health issues as well. And so it's like, yeah, he didn't play, and people kind of forgot about him. But it wasn't because the dude couldn't play; like he just wasn't talented enough. Remember, Eugene Asante, 4-star guy who started his career at North Carolina, and in several years played a decent role for the Tar Heels on a decent, you know, two at times good North Carolina team. And on top of that, he's a 5th-year senior coming in here. There's a lot of experience with Eugene Asante and what he brings to the table.
And he was he wasn't a Hugh Freeze signing. He was brought in by the previous staff. But Hugh Freeze has a habit of finding guys like Eugene Asante, highly recruited players that it didn't pan out at their original school, or guys who would have gone to a bigger school, but there was an academic issue and things got mixed up for a year or two, and you know, Hugh Freeze was waiting for them on the other side, or you know, any number of ways that Hugh Freeze assembled his rosters at both Ole Miss and Liberty. And now at Auburn, you look at the pirate ship Hugh Freeze has assembled here of players that, I mean, now there's, and I mean, there are players who came to Auburn because, you know, they were, you know, it didn't work out at their previous location and they were looking for a new home. There are also players who left fairly stable situations to come to Auburn because it would be the best thing for them. Guys like the three starters on the offensive line who came to Auburn from the transfer portal, those aren't guys who left for playing time concerns at their previous place or anything like that. Like, these are guys who wanted to take the step of facing off against SEC defensive linemen and putting that. I always think about Osiris Torrance, the Louisiana offensive lineman who came to Florida and then played his way into the first round. He was going to be a good draft pick at Louisiana, but I think being able to face SEC teams and put that film on his resume was something that helped him eventually get where he was selected in the NFL draft. And for Auburn, you have – yeah, I mean, I just think about the different transfers. You're a big McLeod guy, and I asked – I asked a couple questions.
There's a lot of hype around him right now.
And I asked a couple questions about Steven Sings today because that's the guy who
that was one I think that if I said one of my big takeaways today was just how much we heard and we saw. I mean, in practice today, Sings and McLeod were rotating as the first team jack, and I think that makes sense. They're a good tag team together when you look at size, early down versus late down kind of stuff.
And I remember. And it's easy for things to slip through the cracks because Auburn signed so many new players this offseason. But Steven Sings, a late addition, did not go through the spring with the team. He went through the spring with Liberty and the new coaching staff there, Jamie Chadwell. And Steven Sings at Liberty was going to start at strong side defensive end this season. He went through the spring as a starter. And when a guy goes through the spring as a starter somewhere and then jumps into the portal, you know, I'm curious about what the recruiting was like, and I'm curious, you know, what was going, you know, but this is a guy who decided the best thing for him was to reunite with his previous coach, Hugh Freeze, and come to Auburn. A lot of two former Liberty coaches on the defensive staff, too, in Garrett and Aldridge. Aldridge told stories about recruiting Steven Sings out of high school to Liberty, and Garrett had some praise, too, for this guy. That's another one that, I mean, that the Not to brush Elijah McAllister away too, because he was getting first team reps earlier in the spring, but now it looks like McLeod and Steven Sings, pair of group of five transfers coming in, you know, could have a big impact on Auburn's pass rush this season, and that's a, I feel like we've heard more about McLeod than Sings, but Steven Sings is someone who was noticeably out there today with the first team. Getting reps, Steven Sings is a guy to me that I'd keep an eye on as maybe a player we didn't hear as much about earlier in the spring, but earlier in the off season, but has made a move over the last couple of days to play. What Aldridge said about, and we might play this in the second hour if there's time, but what Aldridge said about McLeod and Sings was like those were two guys who were playing at a different speed than a lot of the other linebackers and jacks, to the point where it's sort of making them look bad because, you know, what the Aldridge is getting on his guys about why Steven Sings and Jalen McLeod were able to play despite being bigger than some of Auburn's linebackers. You know,
except McLeod.
Yeah, well, even McLeod, I mean,
he's got a little bit on some guys.
Yeah, but I was going to say, I mean, not like much bigger, but I mean, even McLeod's got, you know, a little bit on maybe some of the inside guys, and for them to be outrunning
McLeod's listed at 237.
Yeah, so for those guys to be outrunning some of Auburn's other linebacker options, it was concerning to Aldridge. But yeah, his praise for Steven Sings stood out to me. I figured the Liberty guys. I mean, I asked the question with that in mind that the Liberty coaches would have really nice things to say about Steven Sings, and indeed they did. But the way they praised him after the practice, you know, where some deep, you know, some media folks noticed that Steven Sings was out there getting reps with what looks to be the first team. And we'll run through about a week in what the first team looks like, what the first teams look like. Because, Justin, you wrote about this earlier today. It's starting to become a little bit more clear.
Yeah.
And this could change as is the team scrimmages on Saturday and the first of several scrimmages this summer, this fall. Some of the first and second teams or some of the rotations are starting to take at a couple of positions at least starting to take shape. Who looks to be on the first and second team?
Yeah, I think it was interesting. Aldridge said today that it was like talking about versatility and depth at their linebacker spots, and he said, you know, if we've only got four, we'll play with four, but I think it'll help us win. I'd like to have at least five, hopefully, and it's like, you know, that's a group that could use some separation. I feel good about, I'll say three, maybe four guys right now at linebacker that I feel like they're going to be in the top of the rotation. There's room for a fifth, but the way that we have seen and heard about Eugene Asante and Austin Keys, and I would say Cam Riley is the other one. Aldridge talked today a lot about Cam Riley being a guy that they're going to do different things with and maybe everybody else in the room. We talked about like when they want to put an inside linebacker out on the edge in certain situations. Cam Riley's the best fit for that. Makes a ton of sense. That's what he was in high school, and has got some of that pass rushing background to him. And then I think Larry Nixon is just going to be learning more of the defense and plugging into that, because tackle machine, lot of experience with him. That seems to be their four right now, an inside linebacker. There's room for a fifth.
Would the fifth be Robert, wouldn't it? Robert Woody?
I think it would be Robert Woody. Aldridge today, a lot of talk about Robert Woody. He's like, he's just really young.
Yeah.
And I think the quote was, you know, he'll make some plays in practice where you're like, he's got it. And then he'll make some plays where you're like, yep, you're a freshman. Like, this is what you're going to do. And people, like, I think Aldridge made a great point. Like, you got to keep in mind, Robert Woodyard didn't redshirt last season and, like, just go through a lot of stuff on deep. Like, no, he was hurt. Mm-hmm. He was hurt. He didn't get to do a ton of stuff. And so it is kind of like a second shot at a true freshman season for him. And I think he'll get on the field this year, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's not a key part of the rotation, just because I think they think he needs some more seasoning.
I really liked what Coach McGriff there. I said it now. It's Coach Crime. Weston.
Please refer to him by his formal name.
Couple names that he mentioned outside of maybe who you're expecting to hear about at corner. He really
Colton Hood.
Well,
did he talk Colton Hood today?
He talked some Colton Hood.
Colton Hood has been really impressive. That secondary is, you feel pretty good about the two deep there in the secondary, but if there's anybody who can kind of emerge and make a jump up, Colton Hood's had a great camp for one of those freshman newcomers that weren't here in the spring.
So I was struck by McGriff's praise for Champ Anthony, and yep, he did say that Champ Anthony's not a first year college football player because he was in junior college last year. So he's not, you know, it's not apples to apples comparing him to true freshman who came from high school, but he noted how more advanced Champ Anthony was than your average first year guy. And then he singled out JC Hart, went out of his way to talk about the praise for JC Hart. I thought was really for folks who
I don't know how well he's playing, but boy, he doesn't look like a freshman, does he?
We found
I think they can at least find a good special teams role for him this year.
Guy we've been hearing about for a while, you know, since Slack called the show and asked if Auburn was recruiting the SEC defensive back at Lochipoca. This is a guy who I think
Big Ten defense alignment at Lochipoca this year. Just wrote a story about him in the OA News.
Purdue,
going to
join Jeffrey Imba up at Purdue potentially. With JC, Crime was talking about his, you know, some of the sometimes it's there and he can look over and say, you know, I can handle this, and then other times you can tell it's a big transition from what he was doing last year to what's asked him in SEC corner.
1A football to SEC football is about as big of a jump as you're going to get.
And I asked that question specifically, like jumping from relatively small high school ball in Alabama to what you guys are doing out here right now. Like, what are the biggest challenges for a player like JC? And Crime gave an answer about, you know, a lot of it's not physical, but a lot of it's picking up the mental and the speed of the game stuff. But he said the phrase he used was household name. You know, J.C. Hart's going to be a household name when that stuff clicks for him. So, you know, that's high praise for a guy who's, you know, just in his first year with the team.
334-321-1390. That is the Kia of Auburn hotline. Just getting underway here on the Thursday Drive. We'll get to our first break. Come on in and join us.
Drive. Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Thursday. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson, Drew at the controls, and we'd love for you to join in.
Wanted to, because we didn't get to it yesterday. We had Jason in for the first hour, and you know, I think the second hour got kind of silly. Yesterday we had some basketball news. Didn't really get a chance to talk about it.
That's a good bit of basketball news.
What did we know about Auburn and Brooklyn? Did we know they were going to play, and we were just waiting to see who the opponent was?
We knew that they were going to be in Brooklyn. We knew when it was going to be. We knew there were three other teams that were going to be there. We just know which two Auburn was going to play, and they turn out playing Notre Dame and Oklahoma State, the two biggest ones that are going to be up there. No disrespect to St. Bonaventure.
But Auburn-Notre Dame will be a lot of fun.
First time ever Auburn has played Notre Dame in either men's basketball or football.
That's right. Really, really looking forward to that one.
I don't know if they played in baseball before. I don't know. I was. Ooh. I don't know if that's a – I don't. I'm not as brushed up on that history. As somebody who just covers football and men's basketball, those are the ones that I – those are the – that's the list I know
more. I want to say yes in baseball, but I don't know. And so,
they've had another – they got a Notre Dame player. Got a transfer.
That's true, yeah.
So
the so Auburn basketball will take the we're finding out slowly but surely a little bit more about the about who's going to be on the schedule out of conference.
UNC Asheville and Huntsville.
Where these games will be? Yeah, Rocket City is a
and
game
Mike Burgermeister strikes again. This is a UNC Asheville team that they're going to be playing in Huntsville next year. That was one of the best small conference teams in the country last year. I think they only lost two games in conference. Just ran through their regular season title and then swept the conference tournament. Played UCLA in the first round. UCLA took care of them, but UNC Asheville has a 15 seed out of a conference that doesn't routinely, like, they're usually, Big South's usually in that 16 seed play-in kind of mix. But yeah, I mean, this, you saw last year with Auburn how many teams they played that were either returning NCAA tournament teams or ended up being NCAA tournament teams of these, like, smaller non-conference games that they play. To line up a game like that in a different environment, in an environment that'll be more like what a postseason, you know, venue will be, I think is just another bit of really good scheduling from Auburn.
Yeah, just, I mean, to play away from home in a game, yeah, like you said, that may simulate a tournament atmosphere or...
Should get a good Auburn crowd. Yeah. It's the first time in a while that they've played in Huntsville. And I know a lot of fans up in that area are excited for that.
And we think Auburn will take a couple of trips to Atlanta in the off, because there's the game against
one confirmed. I think they'll play Georgia State.
Yeah, a year and a half ago, Auburn announced that they were going to play a game at Georgia State this season, but I don't think it's been they've worked out a day or anything like that.
No.
But I remember that.
App State still looking for the App State confirmation,
yeah,
too.
I remember that, yeah, a year and a half ago they had the announcement that Auburn would make a trip to Georgia State in year two of Georgia State's new arena, which is this year the Convocation Center. But we know about the Indiana game. We know about the game in South Dakota against Baylor. That's the opener, right? That'll be the first game of the season. We think USC's coming. That's a home game. Haven't heard much, you know, regarding whether or not Bronny James will be a part of that team.
I was actually talking with somebody about this today, and we were saying, like, first and foremost, you hope Bronny James can get back to health. I mean, that's a scary thing. But we were talking about how it would be cool to watch a full-strength USC team play in Auburn because, you know, they have the potential to be one of the more talented teams in the country this year.
And Bronny James, even if Bronny James is forced to miss some or all of the season with the recent health episode, that's still a very talented USC team,
man,
that will be. I know Borzello was really high on him in his too early top 25 that he posted to ESPN, but with one of the top freshmen in the country, I believe the top freshman on a couple of the recruiting services, and DJ Rodman transferring in from Washington State, who had a solid season last year for the Cougars. Like, USC's got a talented team that's going to be, we think, coming to Auburn. I know there hasn't been a date set for USC's trip to Neville Arena, but yeah, the out-of-conference schedule, I mean, this could be one of the better ones Auburn's ever played. When you look at Baylor and Indiana and Notre Dame in New York City, and now, and we think USC coming to Auburn as well, with other games on the you know, with the possibility for other games as well. Should be a really exciting start to a basketball season. We talked to Andy Burcham earlier this week, Justin, and he was really excited about what he's seen. He's gotten to see a couple of practices, and he's really enthused about what Auburn has on the perimeter this year, despite losing Wendell and Zepp and Alan Flanagan. Auburn seemingly is loaded up, and they've brought in some exciting options on the perimeter. Are you hearing anything about? I know basketball season's on the way soon, Justin. But it's practice could be starting soon. But so far, hearing anything? Hearing positive stuff about some of how the new players are fitting in?
Yeah, I just think the general sense of this team is that I think the style on the floor is going to be probably more akin to what Auburn fans got to see at the beginning of the Bruce Pearl run. I think it's going to be more pace and space, kind of, you know, run and gun type of team. And I think they have the personnel where there's not a first-round NBA draft pick on this team, like clear-cut guy right now. but I do think they fit really well together, and I think you can see where the offensive upgrades were a priority in this offseason after Auburn struggled relatively as much as they did to score. They went out and got some dudes who can fill it up, and it'll be a fun mix. There's really talented teams in the league, guys, teams with multiple NBA type players. Auburn, I don't know if they have that on their team, but with a reloaded backcourt and a front court that you could put up with, as one of the best in the SEC coming back this year, I think it should be a really, really fun team. And I think they will have a chance to definitely take a step forward from where they were last season. Maybe not win the SEC, might be a bridge too far with this roster, but I definitely think they're going to be in the mix and feel like they can make some noise, some more noise this season and in the postseason.
And then Auburn basketball fans are going to be watching closely here pretty soon. Flory Badunga.
Yeah, somebody asked me about Badunga today, and I was just like, it feels like it's Duke or Kansas.
It does. It's felt like that for a while.
But, I wouldn't rule anything out completely. It has been a weird back-and-forth kind of recruitment where people thought it was Kansas, and then it was going to be Duke, and now Kansas is getting some buzz today. I know, but, Auburn has in the past been able to steal some folks from the big name program. So, if Auburn could land him, man, you're thinking about all of a sudden 2 5-stars in this class. You're thinking about something really special. But I think ultimately it's going to be tough to pull them off from either Duke or Kansas. But we shall see.
We shall. We're halfway done here in hour number one of the drive. Love for you to join in. Again, 334-321-1390. That's the Kia of Auburn hotline. We're right back with more of the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Ferg, tell everybody about The Observer. There's a lot going on right now, and I know you're keeping up with every bit of it you can.
Yeah, no, it's been a great week because we've had so much access and we've had a whole lot to talk about and discuss. So, we had practice observations from the viewing windows, had a story on the secondary this week. Tomorrow, I'm going to try. I had so many mailbag questions this week. People are so excited. I'm going to see how many I can answer. I'm going to try to answer as many as I can that I can fit in one email. So you can check that out. Also, tomorrow morning, we'll have a podcast out. Dan Painter and I will be talking about all things fall camp. We'll talk some Auburn basketball as well with that. So that comes out tomorrow morning. And like I said last week, it's the perfect time to subscribe right now because we're running our best deal ever. We're year 4 of The Observer. We're doing $4 a month or $40 a year instead of the usual $6 or $60. I just got the notification. Actually, I just checked it right here just a while ago. Since we started this sale last Wednesday, 70 new subscribers to The Observer. So it has been probably our biggest growth stretch since we started the whole thing. So it's a perfect time to sign up. We email everything out to you. So like today, when we got off the practice field and I wrote up the observations, they went into people's inboxes around 11 o'clock so you can read as soon as you get them. And then our podcast will do the same thing. We'll put them up early tomorrow morning, and then Saturday we'll have scrimmage day coverage. We're going to get to see something. I don't know what we're going to see, but we're going to get to see something and talk to Hugh Freeze afterwards. So ton of stuff. AuburnObserver.com. Sign up there.
You mentioned writing about the secondary. What what's caught your eye? What do you have to say about it?
Bill and I were just talking just a moment ago. There's a clear separation, it feels like, between the guys that they, the returning starters and then everybody else kind of in the secondary. They've got a group of dudes right now that just feel like the 5 or 6 that returning guys played a lot last year. You can depend on them to be, in the mix. And then the rest of that 2-deep, I think, is going to be guys that, are making a move or potentially, guys that have an opportunity to step up. There's a couple of returning guys on there. So you look at the cornerbacks, it's going to be DJ James and Nehemiah Pritchett. Behind them, Kay and Lee and JD Rim have been locked in as the 2s.
Yep.
all fall camp. Rim getting back healthy, I think, has been huge for them. That we've seen safety. You got Jalen Simpson and Zion Puckett returning as starters there. Behind him, here's the interesting thing. Behind him, looks like Donovan Kaufman and Marquise Gilbert are the guys to watch at safety, because you're seeing more of Kaufman at safety than compared to Star, the nickel spot, mm-hmm. which Keontae Scott's locked down. Caleb Wooden, since he's been back at practice, has been the guy to watch there as Star. So, two deep. I mean, all those guys have played a decent bit, with the exception of Kay and Lee as just a really talented early enrollee. And then it's just the fun, I think, of this group is the next wave.
There's so many young guys.
And they really like a lot of them. Mm-hmm. Now, if there's a guy in that room who I think has the potential and the ability to maybe break into that two deep that we haven't mentioned yet, Champ Anthony is a JUCO transfer.
Yep.
A lot of good stuff we've heard from him. Mentioned earlier, Colton Hood has had a great fall camp among those newcomers. Sylvester Smith getting a lot of love at Star. Austin Osbury, another guy that's getting a lot of reps at Star. But that second wave looks so interesting, because not only does Auburn have a lot of freshmen and a lot of newcomers in the secondary, look at the 2024 class right now.
Oh, it is loaded in the secondary.
They're loaded in the secondary. Every one of those dudes are composite blue chips. Mm-hmm. Every one of those guys are four-star. You don't get KJ Bolden, but you have, you know, five guys right now that are all composite five or four stars back there. So it's such a really deep and talented room. And I'm going to be very interested to see how many of those guys that we just mentioned in that next wave get opportunities to get on the field this year on defense, knowing that, you know, a good chunk of the guys that are going to be starters or key players for Auburn this year in the secondary aren't going to be playing a lot more college football. J.D. Rim, Kay and Lee, some of the other guys maybe. But you're losing a lot after this year, and how they want to get those guys on the field and get some reps, I think, will be very fascinating to watch.
They're getting guys experience at different spots in the secondary. It seems like Kaufman is now – Is Kaufman just back to safety? Like, is that the
they've had him at Star a little bit. This was something that was asked today of Zach Etheridge, and he said we move them all around. You know, doesn't really see ones and twos, but you know, they're kind of moving them around with safety, and then that he was challenging Jalen Simpson at that spot. So at the safety spot, that was his words. He was challenging Simpson. So I think it's going to be more safety for him. And you've seen him a lot more at safety than you have seen him at nickel here in fall camp. And we'll see. Caleb Wooden right now would be the one I think would be the backup there, because I think Keontae Scott has done a really good job of kind of establishing himself as the guy in the nickel for Auburn this year, which he was last season. But you know, it looks like there's some real separation at that group now.
Austin Osbury, you mentioned him at the nickel. Is that, I mean, it seems like that's pretty much where I've seen him, but I haven't had a chance to see. Is he working at some at safety as well? I haven't really been able to tell.
Some at safety, but mostly at nickel, at Star. Also, Sylvester Smith was another one I mentioned there.
Mm-hmm. Because Terrence Love and C.J. Johnson have been more safeties.
Yep, C.J. Johnson today getting some work at safety. Another one I thought was really interesting, Griffin Speaks out there at safety today as a walk-on, getting some, just with the third team, kind of doing some walkthroughs. He, some local folks who listen to Auburn High or follow Auburn High might be interested in this. Tuesday, when we were out at practice, special teams, they were going on. Speaks had a couple of reps that got a lot of the older guys on the team fired up watching him, just manhandled a dude one time on one of them. So cool for him to see getting those opportunities. Also, I was telling somebody this today, I don't know if it's going to be super consequential in the depth chart, but one of the moves I think that made a ton of sense for me is Powell Gordon out at Jack instead of inside linebacker. His natural home
that's where I always thought he would be able there to help out, certain circumstances, certain situations.
Brent Williams, by the way, having a good fall camp. He had a good spring as an early enrollee, but Brent Williams making some noise. That Jack room, I mean, it's going to be Sings and McLeod and McAllister as they've clearly, I think, separated themselves. But Brent Williams is a guy they want to kind of develop for the future, and he's an interesting – it's another local kid. So it was good to see some of those local kids, even though they're probably not going to be starters or two deep guys this year, maybe mostly special teams dudes right now. I think they're doing a really good job.
We're going to talk to Camden Brown tomorrow. He is one of the receivers. You know, I feel like, and even I think you may have made a note about this, that we're not talking as much about Javarius Johnson and Camden Brown as we are about other receivers out there, and that's you know,
and yet
we're going to talk to Camden Brown tomorrow. Well, and I was there.
Yeah, it's hard to think they'd put him out there if, like, well, you're not going to see him.
And I was there when Nathan King pointed out that it does seem like Camden Brown, more than Javarius, Camden Brown is somebody where when the media is watching the team, it doesn't seem like he gets many reps at all.
We haven't seen either one of them much.
And then the university will post videos and highlights from practice where Camden Brown is
catching touchdowns over the first team defense.
Is playing against the first team. So, yeah, I wonder if there's a desire to get more reps for the guys that are new to the team.
I really do. I think especially in the slot with Javarius Johnson, I think getting Caleb Burton up to speed as a guy they feel like can play right away for him this year is big. And also, Jay Fair's had a really good camp.
How many catches did Jay Fair have last season?
Two.
Right? I mean, Jay Fair did
two catches on six targets.
Right. So, I mean, and I don't know how many total snaps we're talking, but not very many for a guy. That's a guy who needs more reps and probably needs to.
Whereas with Javarius, I mean, they went through the spring saying that Javarius was going to be a key guy for him, key guy. And look, somebody mentioned this today. It's in the mailbag tomorrow. Jair Shorter. Like, you hadn't heard as much about Jair Shorter. I think we need to remind folks from Nashville, where Freeze was like, hey, we're going to have to be smart with him with his reps because he has a very lengthy injury history from his time at North Texas, and you want to be smart, especially with a guy who's, six-year college football. Mm-hmm. So there's so much. I think that's the big thing, though, with wide receiver that we've seen in practice. They are just moving guys all over the place, and these guys are with the ones, and then they're with the twos, and then they're with the next room, and then this guy's inside, and that guy's out. There's just a lot of movement in that room, so I caution people, don't read too much into that in a position group where you're seeing a lot of rotation. Like, when you look at when we put out the depth chart or, like, here's who was with the ones and the twos and the threes, over a course of a few practices, I tell people all the time, the big thing is to look for trends. If this guy's with the ones back-to-back days, 3 days in a row, okay, that means something. For wide receivers, if you've seen nine different dudes with the ones, it's like, okay, that ought to tell you something, that, you know, there's a lot of rotations, a lot of dudes are getting those opportunities. In fact, when you rotate so many at the ones, the guys that you don't hear at all, I think, are just as interesting as the guys you do hear, because there could be a situation like with Javarius, maybe with Camden Brown, Jair Shorter, where you're like, okay, we can be smart with these guys. We know what we've got in them right now, you know, heading into camp. Or heading into the season.
Receiver feels like a position where I wonder how long they can seriously evaluate 9 or 10 guys for the rotation before it needs to get smaller and the reps need to start going to guys that look like they're going to play more than others. And that's where Saturday could be important, right? Saturday could be, you know, one of the things they use. And maybe not the only chance for these guys, because there will be more scrimmages before the start of the season and practice will continue going into the season. But for guys who want to have an impact week one, week two, it's probably, like, Saturday's scrimmage could be an important opportunity to establish yourself or make the argument that you deserve playing time. What positions, Justin, seem like they could be, you know, where they might want to try to narrow down their candidates and this scrimmage could be? We know about quarterback.
Quarterback's obvious.
Wide receiver
could make a ton of sense there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to play 9 or 10 guys.
No.
I mean, but you could play 6 or 7.
Linebacker, maybe, if they can just find some separation at linebacker. Everywhere else,
I think
they're pretty set.
Yeah,
who is what?
Do you get the sense that maybe there's not tight end as a position, but there's sort of different? I mean, what was the
out there today, and Micah Riley was getting a lot of reps. I'm just saying, like, it. This kind of reminds me a lot of the wide receivers. Like, some of these experienced older guys just might not be as getting as many reps. Not because, like, you know, today you see Mike Riley with the ones and the Rivaldo Fairweather with the twos. Does that mean Rivaldo's second team and Mike Riley's first team now? No, but I think it does show something about who they're giving reps to, because I think they want to see, you know, how they respond to it.
And I feel like we see a ton of Deal and Fromm in practice too. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, when they're running.
Saw
these
a
sets.
Decent so, bit of Frazier today.
Yeah, what they, you know, how they decide to use these five tight ends. And I told Bill I want to see the five tight end package where they go with they go with the five scholarship tight ends as the five skill position players. But no, this is a that's another. between the tight ends and the receivers, like they have a, and I guess you can lump the backs in too, because we've seen them, you know, play with different looks. But yeah, they have a lot of different. Would running back qualify as a position? I mean, it sounds like there's competition. I mean, the way they're going to try to factor in we feel good about Jarquez, or at least we feel good about the role you would expect Jarquez to have if there are no restrictions. And after that, wouldn't you say there's some competition with multiple scholarship options to be the next guy up, or a guy who gets a real look in the offense? I mean this is a scrimmage is a chance for they haven't been able to get physical. Like, a scrimmage is a chance for some of these running backs to be out there and, you know, saying, hey, this is maybe I deserve a real look.
Yeah, it's running back, I think, is going to be more role-based than necessarily, like, this constant, like, rotation, you know? I think Jarquez and Damari do a lot of similar things, and I think Cobb and Batie are two guys that you're gonna look at as, you know, certain opportunities, certain ways to use them, certain packages. I think both of them have really good speed. I think they're not as much between the tackles. Like, I think Cobb could be that guy. But I think we're seeing more of them as, like, sweeps or splitting them out wide and doing stuff in the passing game with them. Whereas I think Hunter and Damari, I think, are your top two, like, standard bell cow type of running backs. Whereas the other two, they might not be dudes that get the ball 10, 15, 20 times a game, but you can be a lot more versatile in the way you use them because of their skill sets. Batie, because of his size and his speed. Cobb, I think, is just naturally just more gifted as a receiving option than maybe some other guys in the room. Because, I mean, look, he had like 2,000 yards receiving at Catholic. You don't usually get that out of a running back who had as many numbers as he did.
You got to take a break here, but what's the I'll tell you, when we come back, we'll talk about where things are at quarterback right now, because I think that's still something people are. I mean, even with the understanding that there may not be resolution imminently, you know, that's still a position people are really curious about, like where this thing is headed, and when's the next time we get news about what's going on at quarterback. So we'll do that when we come back.
We will do it. We'd love for you to join in again. 3-2-1. 1390, that's the number to get you through to the drive.
Yellowwood knows that a five-star backyard is the place to make last.
390, toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back in. Final minute or so here of hour number one of the drive. Yeah, a lot of talk, obviously, I mean, and excitement about the upcoming football season. Justin, Fan Day, or the Family Fest, is coming up on Saturday. We were talking about it yesterday. If there's nice weather, I got a feeling there'll be a good crowd for this, because the feeling I get just from fans is they're more interested than they've been in a while.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's been obvious with the season ticket sales. Not to make it about me, but I'll go back to what I said in the last segment. Like, we've had so many new subscribers here at the Observer in the last week and a half.
A lot of folks think that's me joining
the pack.
Well, a lot of folks think that's the Peck effect.
But I'll tell you one thing: the amount of people reading and listening and responding to our stuff from the first week and a half of fall camp, it's more than we've had since we started this, and I think that speaks for itself. It's not because I gotten better. Let's be very clear.
No,
and I don't think it's because Dan's on board. Although Dan has flipped some people into subscribing.
Perfect.
I know that.
Storm. It's a perfect storm of a lot of different things. Justin, don't sell yourself short. Your writing is a big part of it.
All right, we've got to step aside. Halfway done here on the Thursday Drive.
Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Thursday Drive. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio with Drew at the controls. We'd love for you to join in. Oh, Nearly got excited there. It's like, love for you to join in here on this Thursday. Anything on your mind sports-wise? And there are a couple of ways you can join us. You can call us on the Kia of Auburn hotline. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one. They were the sponsor of hour number one. Hour number two is brought to you, as usual, by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. Mention one of the ways you can get through is the Kia of Auburn hotline. You can also text us.
You can text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts. Great podcasts this week. Like Justin was saying, a lot of information coming out of fall camp. We had Brian Matthews on the show on Monday. We had Jason on the show on Wednesday. We're working on the issue of, I guess, Matt pointed out to you.
Yeah. The
Drew, we got to fix
yeah,
this.
Yeah, we do have a problem that, my younger son, who doesn't get a chance to listen live all the time, so he listens to the podcast when he's out running, walking the dog, doing whatever. And, when we're playing audio from the computer that is recording, they don't hear it on the podcast. On the podcast, they're not hearing. So we would play an interview, and it would be nothing.
Well, we'll
figure that out.
Well, here's the thing: we've got the MP3s. So I mean, I guess we could slip the MP3 in. Yeah, after the fact, we might do that. So I mean,
we appreciate that tip. I mean, we didn't realize that.
Thanks for the heads up. But yeah, we'll get the when we run audio from now on, we'll try to make sure it's included in the podcast. But the podcast presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors, available however you listen to podcasts. Go to ESPNAU.com and use the podcast center, or go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron. Rate, review, subscribe if you consume the show. That way it helps us out. And again, big shout out to all our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
As we jump into hour number two.
Mentioned quarterbacks towards the end of the first hour. Music started playing before we could really get into it. But yeah, I'd love to know from you two, having been at the viewing windows we've had so far, your observations on the three quarterbacks battling to stay in the mix to be Auburn's starter.
I think the thing that has stood out to me the most is when we've been out there, you've mostly seen Peyton Thorne with the ones. You saw Astrid with the ones earlier this week as well. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of hype and a lot of people excited about Holden Gariner. We haven't seen Gariner with the ones yet when we've been out there. Let's keep that in mind. We haven't seen everything. So I think that's a pretty good signal of kind of if they trim this thing to two, it would most likely be Thorne and Ashford. But
that's what we thought, you know, heading into the fall. Holden has improved. I just don't know, and none of us really know how well he, you know, runs the offense. Does he get him into the right play? Does he make the right decisions? And he'll have that opportunity, I think, on Saturday. But I think he still has some catching up to do, probably, to be in the top two.
I do, too. And I think the thing with Ashford is you got to keep in mind he has experience. He's healthier. He seems to be throwing the ball better in practice. Accuracy, I'm not saying he's out there, you know, perfect every time. But
he looks more comfortable throwing short passes, doesn't he?
And, yeah, health, I think, could be a big key to that as well. And then you also have to keep in mind with Robbie Ashford, his biggest attribute to date as a quarterback, you can't really see in fall camp because you're going to get whistled down pretty quick. They don't want you to get touched in that room. And that's why I also think that even if Peyton Thorne continues to look like the guy who'd be the favorite to start and would start in week one against UMass, I think you could see some Robbie Ashford against UMass and, you know, use that as either a gateway to get him some more snaps at primary quarterback or maybe find a way to get him on the field in certain packages or certain sets.
Yeah, I'm waiting to see like what the quarterback picture looks like at 1 and 2 before I speculate on like will they still find a role for Robbie Ashford if he's not 1 and 2, because I don't know what Robbie Ashford's going to want if he's not the first quarterback or the second quarterback on this team, and you know, so that's like but I would say to your point about the mobile quarterback thing, because it's mentioned whenever you have quarterbacks with different styles competing for one job. Hugh Freeze strikes me as someone who understands how to evaluate a mobile quarterback, you know, and versus a pro style guy. Or when you have quarterbacks with different skill sets that are competing to be a team starter like that. That's something Hugh Freeze will weigh over the weeks as he tries to narrow it down. Do you get the sense that this thing could be? I mean, we could still be talking about three quarterbacks going into the second scrimmage. In about a week and a half, or
maybe. But they said 10 days originally when they wanted to start trimming some
things.
And
that would be Saturday.
That would be Saturday. So yeah, I think it would be kind of a clear if they're still.
I think that's
why
he said 10 days. He's going. Yeah. We're going to be scrimmaging 10 days in. And
yeah.
And if they made a cut right now, I would guess Holden would be the guy who finishes third, just because. We've seen more of Robbie and Peyton, like Justin just said. We've seen more of Robbie and Peyton taking first-team reps than Holden. But I would, I would watch out for Holden Gerner making a case that he could be at least the backup quarterback on this team. Bill, what about you? What's
I wouldn't be stunned. I'd be a little surprised, but I wouldn't be stunned. He definitely looks good throwing the ball. I mean, there's no question about that. It's just the whole thing. How much, how ready is he to be that? He does seem, if Peyton's your number one guy, he's more like that, where it would be less of a change for your offense, from the number one to the number two.
Yeah, I would say that's true. I mean, maybe style of play factors in, and if they, that could help Holden, especially if Peyton is ultimately the guy. Yeah, I mean, just sort of how the coaching staff views Peyton and Robbie and Holden. You know, it'll become more clear as we get closer to the start of the season. I'm still guessing Peyton Thorne, emerges as the guy. I haven't seen. I guess I was comparing it to when we went into fall camp last year. And there was this belief, I think, among most folks that Zach Calzada would eventually emerge as the starter, the newly arrived transfer quarterback. And from that first day or two, it seemed like maybe something was amiss.
Yeah, it hasn't felt that way, though, this year.
It has not felt that way with Peyton Thorne. Like, I'm not qualified to tell you pass for pass how these quarterbacks are doing, but it doesn't seem like something physically is holding back any of them from what I can tell. Like, I had concerns about watching Zach Calzada throw the first time we got to watch him throw last year. We thought, is everything okay with the shoulder? Is everything okay with the elbow? And you're not, at least at the moment, you're not worried. That doesn't seem like anything's, a factor in Robbie versus Holden versus Peyton to be Auburn's starting quarterback this year. It's more about it seems like it's more performance than anything else. Doesn't seem like it's going to be health holding one of these guys back.
Well, that's one of the things. That's probably the biggest thing that everybody is wanting to know about. I mean, the other positions, yeah, we're very interested in those. But I mean, I think the fan base wants to know who's QB1.
Now that Jarquez is on the field, I think people
I think so.
I mean, now
they want to know. When will we see Jarquez on the field?
Yes.
What game? When will we see him there? I think now it's that's the question. It's not if, it's when.
How about this? My guess would
Don't you think so, Justin?
Yeah. If I agree. If Jarquez's availability during the season is in question, I don't think we're going to know about it until Auburn takes the field on the Saturday against UMass and Jarquez Hunter isn't there. Like that would be my guess that there won't be anything. And then. And then the question would be, is that a one week thing? Is he available week two? When is he back? Like those questions emerge after that. But we can tell you since when were we out there? Was it Monday? Was the practice where we saw
Tuesday
morning when we were out there and Jarquez and
seems like more than 2 days ago.
Yeah, and we don't we don't know if that was his first practice, Justin, but I heard guys coming over and welcoming him back.
I think so, yeah.
Which gave me the idea that it might have been his first practice back with the team. But yeah, Jarquez is and he doesn't look like he's missed a step. I mean, Justin, your breakdown of when people ask you how does Jarquez look and
he looks good. He's fine.
Still Jarquez.
Hunter.
Yeah, he looks ready.
Yeah, yeah. The pop, the explosiveness has been pretty impressive to see. And yeah, this is a guy that. I don't know if he is necessarily going to be this all SEC type of running back like the guy he's replacing. I think his numbers, his efficiency over the last two seasons is good, especially when you give him a bigger workload. You'll see if that holds up. But man, I mean, you know, on the field, you like what you see out of a guy like Jarquez Hunter, just in the practices we've got to see him moving well, really explosive with his cuts. And I will say, I think the big thing that's going to push him is that it's been a really good camp for Damari Austin, and I think Damari Austin is going to be able to push him along even further in this room. Mm-hmm. And of course, Brian Battee and Jeremiah Cobb, even if they're more kind of role guys for this running back room this year, I do like their potential, especially Cobb looking bigger and I would say a little quicker than people may give him credit for.
All right, here's the question that I've gotten, and it's like I don't know how to answer this yet.
Great.
But I get – well, yeah, so here we go. Here we go, Justin.
All right.
So how good can this offense be? People go, well, I hear about, oh, they're better, they're more talented, and I say, yes, they are.
Yes.
But I just don't know, and I think it may be a little while into the season before you know. I don't expect the offense just to come out and click. Now, maybe against UMass. Still, they may pile up a lot of yards and points.
Yeah, UMass, Samford, I think they could put up some numbers for sure.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that
you
know this thing is a
Georgia
well-oiled
have,
machine. Yeah, that's a couple of teams that know how to play defense.
Good grief. I mean, A&M, for as bad as they were on offense last year, they were awesome on defense. Just an excellent defensive team that returns a good bit of talent. So, yeah, I think I'm very comfortable in saying that I think this offense is going to be better than the one we've seen the last couple of years for Auburn. I do think that if the offensive line is as good as it can be, that people have talked him up to be, it could be, you know, this could be an offense that is, you know, top half of the SEC and you know, make some real strides for this to be a strong team and kind of lays a foundation for the future. The question is, and I think Hugh Freeze will tell you this because I've heard him say stuff along these lines, like, this team's gotten better, this offense has gotten better, we just don't know how much better they've gotten in comparison to
right.
the established SEC teams, especially the ones with a ton of talent.
That's the question. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's fun though to think about, because you know they are better. They're better prepared to compete than they would have been.
I think every room,
it's not even close.
I think every room on offense has gotten better, with probably the exception of running back, just because Tank was so good. And when you see what Tank's doing in Jacksonville right now, in preseason, just every camp, you know, every camp practice they have down there, it's like, man, Tank Bigsby just broke another crazy run. It just makes you wonder, man, if he had a better offensive line in front of him, what kind of numbers he could have put up. But, you know, losing Tank but adding Jeremiah Cobb and, you know, Brian Battee with a better Damari Austin with more reps for a guy in Jarquez Hunter, I think it could be a really, really good room. It's just Tank was such a big loss.
The disclaimer would be that other teams in the SEC have improved too from where they felt like they were last year. And so, you know, the fact that Auburn has made what appear to be significant improvements in a couple different spots, like, I don't know if that necessarily equals a much better win-loss record than you had last year, because the schedule's different and you're not comparing. I mean, yes, Auburn might be in a better position than they were in at parts of last year's roster, but you're not facing last year's schedule. You're facing this year's schedule. So teams like, you know, even teams you beat last year, you know, teams like A&M, you know, they could, you know, we'll see what that leads to on the field, but you know, there's a lot of variables.
There are. But, I mean, I think you feel pretty good that Auburn's improved itself as, you know, so much. It's going to be hard for other teams to have. The other teams that were right there that Auburn played with last year, it's hard to imagine they're going to improve more.
It also helps that you would think you've switched out a game against Penn State for Cal.
That's exactly right.
Which looks to be a you would think it's a more winnable game than, you know, it's – Penn State was a better team on paper. Last year's Penn State team was a better team on paper than the Cal team.
Oh, yeah.
Was going to play in week two.
I've got a feeling they're a better team on the field.
In what could be the last. I mean, it is cool that Auburn gets to go to a Pac-12 team in
in the last year.
Yeah, what probably is the last year
of the Pac-12.
I'm thinking about going.
Before they play ACC team Cal, right?
Yeah. I'm thinking about going to that game just because it feels like now, the end of the Pac-12, I feel like I should.
I think Andy Staples floated a really interesting idea today that I thought would be really cool. Instead of like a conference in name only, I guess would be the way. They were talking about how Notre Dame, because Notre Dame has talked about how Stanford and Cal, you know, their academics and all that, and how they kind of line Notre Dame plays Stanford every year. He was talking about if you could do some sort of alliance where Notre Dame, Cal, Stanford, Air Force, Army, and Navy, since there's a lot of mixing between those, they all play each other. Maybe not have a championship, maybe not crown anything, but kind of be independent together and kind of like, hey, you know, 5 games a year you're going to be playing these teams, right? And Army and Navy and Air Force. I don't know if
Air Force. Then just find 7 other games.
Yeah. Notre Dame would do that easily. I think Stanford could do that pretty easily.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to play the service academies.
Well, the financials, I think, are the bigger problem for Stanford and Cal with doing that versus taking an offer from a bigger conference. Because I was reading about, I think it was either Oregon State or Washington State that funded. I mean, they funded renovations to the stadium, Bill, borrowing against future media.
Yeah, future thinking, income yeah, from the conference.
Thinking, oh, yeah, this Pac-12 gravy train is going to keep going for another decade. At least we can borrow against future media earnings to fund things right now. And, yeah, the drop from a Pac-12, you know, revenue to that is, yeah, I think, you know, we've kicked around the idea of Stanford being independent and playing the service academies and Notre Dame and finding.
Throw Cal in there.
Yeah, finding it.
I don't think Oregon State and Washington State are going to be the same kind of draw.
No,
and I feel
either.
Like the Mountain West, if they can get them, it would be really good pickups for both of them.
Yeah, the Mountain West, or if the Big 12 wanted to. Like,
I don't think they do.
But I don't think they do either. No, I think that Oregon State and Washington State are.
I think
are,
they'd had an opportunity, but. Yeah.
And you know, and that's led to a couple of interesting things this week about sort of conference shakeups. Did you see the Chip Kelly quote, Bill?
No,
because I thought Chip Kelly, this wouldn't work now because multiple broadcast networks are affiliated specifically with conferences.
Mm-hmm.
But Chip Kelly tossed out. He was on a podcast earlier this week, and Chip Kelly said, and I've got the quote in front of me. Notre Dame is an independent in football. They're in a conference for everything else. Why aren't we all independent in football? Take the 64 Power 5 teams, make that one division. Take the 64 Group of 5 teams, make that another division. We play for a championship. They play for a championship. No one else is affected. Our sport is different than everyone else. We only play once a week. Travel's not a big deal for football. It's a huge deal for all the other sports. Unquote.
That sounds good.
They've been talking about for a while a breakaway college football league. I will say this, though. The SEC and the Big Ten are still big enough names in football. And you would, I mean, yeah, like you're gonna want that. Like SEC teams in football are going to still want to be in the SEC. They're going to still want to play for an SEC championship. That still matters. And I think part of the issue that college football faces, I think, in terms of fan engagement and awareness is this hyperfixation on just the national championship. Whereas, I mean, Bill, you can probably talk to this more than I can. Back in the day, winning the SEC was a big dad go.
Oh, you're not kidding.
And now it's not. I think if Auburn won the SEC in the next couple of years, a lot of people would be excited. But like you talk about sometimes when Auburn has made it back at like 2013 or maybe 2017 when they all came close and all that, or it's like, well, they didn't win it at all. Oh, they wouldn't win. It's like, no, that was a big deal. Like when Pat and them were reeling off SEC titles in the 80s and college, what was it? National championships were a lot more nebulous to kind of come up with. I don't want to compare everything, you know, to what it used to be, or, you know, I just think you lose some of that.
You kill that when you expand playoffs, though.
Well, the other thing...
Exactly. Then it becomes
exactly.
The other thing about Chip's comment is you'd have to adjust the 64 that were Power 5 because you've got some of those that probably wouldn't be in there. You've had the Big 12 add some former Group of 5 teams. I can see taking the top 64, but if you did that without conferences, would Vandy make it?
And well, that's and good. It's a good plan. It's a good plan a decade ago.
Yeah.
And Chip Kelly's making, I think, is one that hasn't been acknowledge
enough.
Because
you actually had 65, including Notre Dame.
When you get outside of football and men's basketball, well, football. When you get outside of football, the travel is going to be a nightmare.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what he was saying.
Folks that have jumped into these conferences.
We're way behind getting to break. We'll be right back with your calls. 334-321-1390. Well, we don't even have one open. Brett, you'll get us started when we come back here on the Thursday Drive.
Experience and knowledge from the Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Drive. 25 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Thursday. Bill, Dan, Justin, and let's get to the Kia of Auburn hotline. And Brett is up first. Hey, Brett.
Hey, Bill. I'm a little bit more positive than y'all are that the offense is going to be not just better, but a good bit better. I'm not going to say they're going to be the best in the conference. And I'm not going to say that they're going to just move up and down the field on Georgia, but, you know, the quarterback play, passing-wise, is going to be a lot better. I mean, not better, but a lot better. Our center, for the first time in about 3 or 4 years, will not be knocked backwards 2 out of every 5 plays. So the offensive line will be better. Quarterback's better. As far as Jarquez, my God, last year I think he had 5 games where he had toted the ball double figures, and I think it was either 10 or 12 times in those games. His worst game was 12 for 54. Second worst game was 10 for 8. And I believe he's one of only 2 backs in the nation who had receptions of 60 yards or more. Yeah. Had 2 receptions of 60 yards or more.
Yeah.
And last thing, the thing about the conference is going to be a lot better. You know, if you really think about it, we hear that every single, so-and-so is going to be so much better. But it's not. Every year is about the same. You got 2 to 3 very, very good teams. And then you got a lot of teams at 8-4, 7-5, 6-6.
Hey, well, my question a while ago was, what teams should improve more than Auburn has?
Well, I don't believe in this Texas A&M hype. I mean, they had some talent on defense, but Auburn, with the offensive line they had last year, ran the ball very effectively.
Oh, yeah.
It's just we had a guy who couldn't hit an open receiver at the time if his life depended on it.
To your point, Brett, about improvement, I went back and looked. The year before Hugh Freeze got to Ole Miss was second worst in the SEC in scoring offense and total offense. They finished that year 5th or 6th. Last year, Auburn was 10th in the conference. So if you make a similar jump from year zero to year one, so to speak, with a Hugh Freeze offense, I mean, you're looking at Auburn, like you said, potentially being one of the better offenses in the league.
And I think if you bring back largely the same roster that you had at the end of last year, it's harder to imagine drastic improvement. But this is, and that's not to say that Auburn has brought in guys that are guarantees. I mean, I still think in the case of both tackles, I'm expecting them to play well. But there's an adjustment from going from Group of Five to SEC football, and it could be, you know, there could be setbacks early, as good as Dylan Wade and Gunnar Britton appear to be. But no, it's there's absolutely the chance, Brett, that this thing breaks through immediately. Hugh Freeze has engineered quick turnarounds before.
Well, you know, Dan, I know obviously there's a lot of difference in Group of Five and Division One, but Gunnar Britton, when he went up against Division One players, he didn't seem to have a problem.
He did okay against Marcus Harris last year. They talked about that. We got to talk to Gunnar Britton last year, and he talked about how, Marcus and I knew each other immediately when I got here, because we'd faced each other the entire game when Auburn played Western Kentucky last year.
Yeah, and offense, it's not – offensive line, it's not like if you're a receiver, you know, someone can get lucky and get wide open twice, you know, make 2 big plays. I mean – you either can or you can't on the offensive line. It's not a
Brett. I was asking. I think it was Brian Matthews earlier today. I was like, when was the last time you felt this good about Auburn's slated starters at tackle going into a season? And he was going back to, I mean, maybe the year you had Tega and Jack Driscoll, because they both had a track record of playing well, and that would have been what, 19 would have been Tegan and Driscoll, maybe 18. I forget the year that they were playing alongside each other, but it's several years to go before then, and these two guys could potentially outperform those two.
Last thing before I go, tell me about Larry Nixon, how he's looking, and y'all have a great day.
Appreciate it, Brett.
Yeah, this is a good question because today we talked to Josh Aldridge about Larry Nixon. Said, you know, he's picked up the defense so quickly because he's a guy who's played a ton. This is a tackle machine at North Texas. I don't think he's necessarily a starter right now, but we were talking about it earlier. I think he's a two-deep guy for sure. I think he's somebody who is going to, you know, get on the field a decent bit for Auburn. Aldridge really likes the fact that he's played a lot of football. He knows a lot, and they brought him in for a reason as mm-hmm. well. I mean, this is a rental guy. I think he's one of Auburn's top four linebackers right now. Don't know if he'd necessarily be the starter, but I do think you're going to see a decent bit of Larry Nixon this year.
334-321-1390. Let's get back to the phone. Was it Scott up?
It's Slack, isn't
Slack.
It?
Slack. Hey, Slack.
What's up, guys?
Slack. Wesley McGriff earlier today said J.C. Hart could be a household name someday. Use those words talking about J.C. Hart.
Smart kid. Very athletic. What type of offense did Coach Freeze run in Ole Miss? Was it hurry up?
Mm-hmm. Yes, very hurry up, spread the field, a lot of four wide stuff. Kind of one of the early adopters of that, along with Gus Malzahn. I think they were kind of coming up around the same time, doing some of the same things in college.
And Montgomery comes from the Briles tree, you know, and was running
Houston
a lot of
Baylor. Which is not slow paced either.
Yeah, some incredibly fast paced teams when they were at Baylor trying
and
to
Houston. They were at Houston together as
and
well.
And Houston.
Okay, so we could possibly see the same type of offense that Tennessee's running, but probably not as fast.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think there's a lot of what Tennessee does when you talk about ultra wide splits, playing really fast, a lot of switch concepts on the outside in the passing game. Josh Heupel took a lot of that from what Baylor did, and there's a lot of similarity there. Cool. And so, yeah, I think. It might take, like Tennessee, I think it might take a couple years before you start seeing it operating it at that level. But even in year one under Heupel, Tennessee was putting up a lot better numbers than people expected them to.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Hey, did y'all get a chance to see, I'm having a blank right now. The young man from Auburn has just got initiated to the Hall of Fame. You get a chance to see
talking about DeMarcus.
Famous.
Yeah, DeMarcus Ware.
Did y'all talk about that?
Talked about DeMarcus a little bit. We had a caller. Earlier in the week, we talked about DeMarcus Moore when he was selected.
Auburn High.
When he was selected for induction earlier in the year, but we had somebody mention his speech. I really appreciated the moment, and it's one of several aspects of DeMarcus' speech that has made the rounds. He left some seats open for some teammates he's had who have passed away during his career that he still thinks about a lot, including Demaryius Thomas. Who he was close to with the Broncos, I would encourage folks to check out DeMarcus' speech and listen to him tell his story. Really cool moment to have an Auburn High graduate and a guy who's meant so much to college football in the state in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
You think the city of Auburn ought to do something for him?
Oh yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I mean, okay. I don't know, a street or what do you
give?
Know.
A I
pro
mean,
football hall
you know,
of
how many towns have Hall of Famers?
A park, you know, what do you
Absolutely.
Do?
Absolutely,
like,
right. Like something. I think, he's done an awful lot for the city and the community too.
Yes. Yeah.
I agree, Slack.
All right, appreciate it, guys.
Sounds good. John, hang on. We are behind. Got to get to our bottom of the hour break. You'll be up first when we come back for the final half hour of the Thursday Drive.
SBNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final 20 minutes here on this Thursday with Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson, and back to the Kia Auburn Hotline we go. And John is up first. Hey, John.
Hey, John.
Hey, guys. Really enjoyed the show. Hope y'all are doing well. I heard your comments on Chip Kelly's suggestion. And I had that thought, the similar thought myself, is much more like the NFL model. Maybe two conferences with 16, 14 divisions with a centralized governing body that would create a schedule, and your division winners actually make a playoff. I don't understand why college football couldn't perhaps do something like that. And I think as a fan, what's incredibly frustrating to me is, as Jay Billis had mentioned this, but the only time any of these entities actually work in concert together is to prevent any of the labor force or student athletes getting any money.
They can work together, but only to protect their own interests.
Well, there's no reason that there couldn't be, you know, there's no reason for teams not to be in one, you know, aligned in one sport differently than they are in other sports.
In hindsight, John, what would have worked out? So there's a thing in negotiations called favored nations, and TV actors do it a lot when they want to negotiate as a group for more leverage. The Simpsons cast, when they renegotiate their contracts, they all negotiate. There's six people, but they all negotiate basically as one. They all get the same thing. The Friends cast used to do that. So in hindsight, if the five conferences had banded together and said, we're going to negotiate with television networks as one conference instead of as five, and split everything equally among every member institution, you probably would have prevented a lot of this a decade ago or longer. And I think the money would have still been there, because the networks would still want major college football because it draws like few other things in television these days. But you wouldn't have the inequality of the SEC has this deal and the Big Ten has this deal, and it's so much larger than the deals the other conferences have that the best teams in those conferences feel that the only way they can stay relevant is to break away from their conference. And ultimately, like, I don't know where that ends. Does it end with a super conference of all the teams that prioritize college football one day leaving their leagues and going to that conference? I don't know, but it's a worrisome path that it's on right now.
Dan, those are excellent comments. I won't keep you guys, but I completely agree with that. And I'd love for someone at SEC Media Days to ask that type of question to Greg Sankey, because at some point you've got to think the commissioners get together and create some uniformity or some collaboration. Can this really go on this way? That's all I really got, guys. But great comments, Dan. I fully agree with you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate the call, John.
I keep wondering if and Justin, I tossed this out there, like, what happens at the next round of negotiations, where I think it was somebody from The Athletic who threw out there, you know, what's going to happen when a Georgia or an Alabama looks over at a team that's never won the SEC and says, well, what are you bringing to our next round of media rights negotiations? Like, why are you invited to the party? And what happens and what happens there? Bill has said, you know, strong leadership at the commissioner seat could fight off some of that, but I'm nervous about the path things are on in that regard. Great stuff though, John. Appreciate the phone call.
334-321-1390, and Jerry is next. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, guys. I was just thinking about the college football playoff, and there's 12 teams. There's what, four automatic qualifiers?
Well, that's not so fast, my friend.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that anymore.
Automatic qualifiers are something Greg Sankey wants to talk about the next time anybody, because, you know, at the path we're going, I think Greg Sankey and the Big Ten commissioner would both say, maybe the committee should just take the 12 best teams, and what conference they're in is immaterial. It should just be the 12 best teams in the playoff. Not to jump on your question, but continue.
Well, yeah, that leads to my next question. How many teams out of the SEC do you think could make the playoffs?
If there's no cap and there's no automatic qualifications for anyone, Justin, have there been years where five SEC teams finished in the top 12 of the regular season? Where if you were just taking the top 12 teams on the board after conference championship Saturday, could it be plausible that five of them were in the SEC? Like, is that
the one that comes to mind?
I want to say in 17, right?
The 17 year, comes the year, to mind first and foremost.
The year Auburn, Georgia, Alabama, LSU, and someone else were all pretty close. Or maybe not LSU. It might have been two other schools. But I mean, there are years where the SEC's had. I think 19 would be another one, right? Where you had that 9-3 Auburn team lingering just outside the top 10, top 12, along with really good Florida Florida, Georgia, Alabama, LSU teams in 19. So I would think if there were no restrictions in an era with Texas and Oklahoma, five could be the answer if there was absolutely no limitations on it. John,
in 2019, sorry to interrupt. In 2019, heading into bowl weekend, the SEC had five teams in the top 12. That would have been LSU, Georgia, Florida, Alabama, and Auburn. So yeah, 19 is probably the closest thing we've come to that.
I think it could be six.
Especially with Texas and Oklahoma rolling in, it'll be really interesting to see.
Although people are going to beat each other up a little bit, but I mean, it's not unbelievable to think. No,
what do you, Justin? What do you think? Should they throw away automatic qualifications to a 12-team playoff now that we've had conference realignment and the value of winning your conference is maybe diminished if you're not in the Big Ten or the SEC?
Well, I mean, the thing there is just like, you know, winning a conference when it has 18, 20 teams in it, like, you didn't play everybody.
Or four.
Yeah, or
winning,
four.
Or four. When there's four.
I do think they're going to have to readdress it. I really do. And here's something I didn't realize until the other day. Somebody brought this up. You know, the SEC currently has a thing where you have to play a Power 5 team every year. What does that do now? And also, I mean, next year, as it stands right now, next year Cal will not be in a power conference. And so
this Power 5 thing is, I mean, well, that's such an antiquated term. I feel like the term Power 5 died the day UCLA and USC announced they were leaving the Big Ten. Announced they were leaving the Pac-12 for the Big Ten, because then the Pac-12 and some people would say, Justin, that the Big 12 without Texas and Oklahoma is not at the top in the same ballpark of the SEC or the Big Ten as well. There's maybe a point there. They don't recruit. No one in the Big 12. No one in the new Big 12 recruits like a national championship program. Without Texas and Oklahoma
league. Right.
I mean, you could maybe say that about the Pac-12 after UCLA.
Oh, yeah. You could say that.
After UCLA and USC left, Oregon would be the team arguing like, hey, what about us? But now
they're not there anymore either.
They're not there. Well, now no one's there. But the term Power 5 has been on the way out for a while. I don't even know what you would call it now, but it's not the Power 5 anymore. And
no, yeah, it's not.
Justin's point about, yeah, technically Cal in 24 may not be
it's
a game.
It's the big two more and like Auburn, leftovers.
Auburn scheduled Cal when it was a Power 5 game, and when Cal comes here in 2024, they may not be in the Power 5 anymore.
If they're still coming here.
There's not a Power 5. I would think they're not going to turn down that.
No, I'm just – there's no telling what's going to happen, though, by then.
Yeah.
I mean, more reorganization or any more – adding in certain places may change an awful lot of scheduling in the future.
We heard that one of the games that were scheduled in 24, the out-of-conference games, that was one of the factors in not going to 9 in 24, right, was wanting to preserve those scheduled games. So I would think Cal will make the return visit to Auburn in 24. But you know what?
Okay. They may not be able to afford their portion of
Cal
it.
They're either going to make the trip, or they're going to decide they're not a Division I football program anymore, or something in between those two.
That's not that unbelievable either.
Something in between those two. Yep. That's what's. I mean, I just for guys who signed to play for Oregon or Oregon State, Washington State, Cal, Stanford, right? I think because this came up the other day, because who's on the team for Auburn? That Wesley Steiner. Wesley Steiner had a Stanford offer and seriously considered it coming out of high school, and to think like what the next few years of your college football career would be like if you're on a team that doesn't know who is going to be on the schedule in 20, like who are you playing in 24 if you're Oregon State or Washington State or one of those programs right now. Like that's got to be a tough sell to retain your roster.
Oh, no kidding.
After the season.
Hello, portal.
After the season's over, it's going to be tough to keep those guys without being able to tell them who's on the schedule in 2024.
I'll tell you what, we need to get to our final break so we'll have time for Keith when we come back here on the Thursday Drive.
Hi, this is Michael from
Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final segment of the Thursday Drive. And let's get back to the Kia of Auburn hotline. And Keith is next. Hey, Keith.
Hey, yeah, I just want to chime in on a few things. But first, you know, y'all been talking about NIL a little bit and realignments and stuff. And, you know, it all that doesn't really even matter to me anymore. You know, it's just if they let us vote on it, I'll vote on it. But, you know, I said a lot on the NIL and all last year. But, you know, it's going to do what it's going to do. And it's actually went a little bit better than I figured it would. But, you know, what I do like about what's going on over there on at Auburn is, like, one example is Eugene Asante. You know, he really was a no-show last year and didn't know if he'd do anything. And, you know, at least he's being mentioned. And I think that a lot of good coaching and a lot of good fellowship as far as being a father figure and getting the best out of these guys, you're going to see a lot of people that show up that hadn't shown up because there's a lot of people's got a potential that just never really gets tapped. And, you know, I think Hugh Freeze has shown that he can find that in people. I mean, you know, when he was at Ole Miss, he'd bring in high school guys and he'd get the best out of them the first year. And that don't normally happen. You know, it'll happen here and there, but he did it on a wide scale basis.
Well, I think you bring up a good point. I mean, one thing that we have sort of felt the last couple of years is, why aren't other guys getting an opportunity, it seems like? I mean, we're not able to watch all the practices. Don't know if some guys struggled in practice, but it sure seems, Justin, that this coaching staff is giving everyone the opportunity, and you're seeing some players who we didn't see much of, if any at all, yeah, last year, taking that opportunity and really stepping up.
Yeah, I think Asante, who we started talking about at the beginning of the show today, is the best example of that. This is a guy who didn't play much last year. That all wasn't on him and his play on the field. He gets a reset, new staff, new energy. He's been talked about like one of the best defensive players, and you know, that's exactly what you want at this time. Jay Fair, another great example. Dude who only had two catches last season. He's going to be in the mix to be one of the top receivers this season in the main rotation. You know, there's always stories like that, but they're even bigger when you have a brand new staff. And I would also say a new staff that is filled with people that either are familiar with this head coach or familiar with the SEC and looking better prepared for the season.
Yeah, and he's also showing it on the recruiting trail. I mean, we've all said that you can recruit to Auburn. I mean, if you just try and put forth the effort, and, you know, they're doing it and they're selling – you know, Christianity, they're selling, doing things the right way. And, you know, I mean, I don't know what all they're doing, but they're working.
I think it helps. You know what helps is it's difficult to sell uncertainty to a recruit, right? And so when you're facing rumors about your job security, as Gus Malzahn was for the last, 5 years of his Auburn career, and then and Brian Harsin was from basically the moment Bo Nix got hurt, through the end of his Auburn career, when it seems very turbulent from the outside, that's got to be a tough thing to sell to recruits, because mm-hmm. they're hearing the same stuff, and it feels like there has been very
on top
little
of just not trying.
Yeah, on top of yeah, on top.
You're
of,
right.
On
I mean,
top of
I
the
mean,
lack.
The line of the day was from Josh Aldridge. So somebody asked Josh Aldridge, like, "Hey, we know you can't talk a ton about like the specifics of recruiting, but you know, Auburn's got a lot of recruiting momentum right now. What is the key to it?" And he goes, "Effort." And he takes a long pause, and I couldn't help it. It was me and another guy who've been on the beat for a while. I just started laughing because, like, he wasn't taking a shot at the last staff, but it is, like, very, like, oh, yeah. Like, you know, I think there's a lot of people on this staff that are looking around and being like, man, how did they?
What happened?
Yeah, what happened?
Yeah.
Yeah, because, again, these recruiting wins that they've had. Keep in mind, Auburn has not played a down of competitive football yet under this new staff, and they are lining up big-name guys to join this staff, to join this recruiting class. And that speaks volumes.
As far as comparing, you know, how much better we'll be than last year, I mean, I hope we are because, you know, it looked like it was pretty obvious there came to be that Harsin was on his way out, and he knew it, and, you know, Cadillac re-energized the team, but, you know, who knows how good they could have been. And the year before, you know, we were within just a hair of winning two or three more ball games. So
great stuff, Keith. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, we are out of time here on the Thursday drive. Sorry about that. But, yeah, hopefully you can join us tomorrow. Justin, before we're out of here,
yeah,
let folks know once again about the Observer.
AuburnObserver.com, $4 a month or $40 a year. Best deal we've ever run. We've got a huge mailbag tomorrow, big podcast as well. We'll have coverage all throughout the weekend and next week. Ton of stuff on the site. Go check it out.
Dan and I back tomorrow. We're out of time here on the Thursday drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.